So what's up, Bandheads? I just had my interview with Nathan Hamer. Nathan Hamer is the former director of bands at Southern University. And everybody in the band world is talking about his explosive book that just came out called Juked, which chronicles his experiences being the band director at Southern University. And also it talks about how he ended up serving some time in federal prison for embezzlement, and he has lived through his sentence, and he is now here to tell the tale. It was an explosive interview. I got to find out a lot about him, and yeah, let's just face it, the whole HBCU band world is talking about it. I do want to remind you that if you want to get the book, you can go to Hamertime, that's HAYMERTIME.com, and order the book. It's an ebook form, but other versions will be coming out soon. Again, that's Hamertime, HAYMERTIME.com, and the book is called Juked. Let's just get into it. Let's play this interview with Nathan B. Hamer. All right, well, I am here with, oh man, the man that everybody in HBCU bands has been talking about, especially in this past week. I have got Mr. Nathan B. Hamer here to talk with me about his book that just came out called Juked. And man, I've gotten so much response from people that wanted to ask you questions and wanted to know like more about the book. So I'm so glad to have you here.
It's an honor to be here. And as I told you, I wanted to start off the many interviews that I'm going to do with you because we go way back.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'll tell the truth, but I'll let you tell them before I tell them what you did to me.
No, I didn't do anything to you, sir.
Christy kicked me off the fifth quarter, y'all. This is like 1999. You know, they classy. They talking about the most musical bands and the ballads that just touch their soul. And I'm coming in on some BS. Like, all y'all sound da, 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 da. I was the artist at the time. This is like social media before social media. And Christy wasn't having it. Yeah. She was not having it. I think she kicked me off like four or five times.
I think so too. And, but you know, I always like respected you. I always followed your career and everything. And yeah, you were funny to me with like Slaw Busters Incorporated. Don't think I forgot that.
We was on some other stuff though. You know, yeah. I'm an adult now. Looking back, I would probably kick myself out too. So I ain't mad at you for it.
Well, we were all young then because this was a while ago. All right. So look, how has your week been? Let me just ask you because I mean, everybody is talking about your book. So how's your week been since you released it?
It's been crazy. It's been emotional. I got numerous positive feedback. I can't even count. And I received some negative too. But most of the negative come from people who may have read a screenshot or an excerpt from the book, but didn't read the whole book. You have to read it in its entirety to truly understand where I'm coming from. You know, the comments they make on the negative side, it was like, there's no way that you can leave that book with that opinion had you read the whole book. Mm-hmm. But it's all good. You know, I'm just happy to start a conversation that's much needed over years ago.
Right. Okay, great. So let's get into it because I know you want to talk about it. So my first question for you is why now? Like, why did you want to release this book? Because, you know, it came out the weekend of the Bayou Classic, which we all know is a big deal for Southern folks.
And why not now?
World. Okay.
Why not now, though? You know, one thing that I get a lot of credit for is for being a strategist. Mm-hmm. And if you read the book, I gave you my strategy without giving you my strategy. I have a strategy that's written out that I didn't put in a book. But I kind of gave it away. Everything that I do has a strategy to it. But if not Bayou Classic, when? If I released it during Easter, why Easter? If you released it during the summer, why 4th of July? So why not now is the question that I ask.
Okay. So I know in the book that you say that you wrote this while you were serving your sentence in federal prison. So tell me about that writing process. Was it kind of like you just spat it out, journal? Like what was your day like? Did you have time to journal? I mean, let me know about it.
Well, first I started the book with an outline of series of events that happened over my career from high school all the way to my last day at Southern University. And a lot of it got edited out, but it was easy, but it was hard. The easy part was to do the outline and to write. I was in prison, so that's all I had to do from 8 o'clock a.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. And that whole experience will probably be another book. But the hard part about writing about it was some things that I thought I was over, I truly wasn't over. Whatever you write about for that day consume your thoughts, you relive that day, you don't have anything else going on. You go to sleep dreaming about it. So when I wrote about things that made me laugh, I had some good nights. But when I wrote about some things that I thought I was over, some things didn't make the final cut of the book. But some things that you, if you read the book, you read about, I was crying while I was writing it. I was in my emotions because that's all that consumed me. It's not like that I was going to a day job or I had anything else to do to distract me from those thoughts. So prison was therapeutic for me in a sense. It wasn't a great place, but it was therapeutic for me.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So, speaking of therapy, because let me just back up and say that like I've gotten so many submissions. I think there were 65 questions that were submitted from the public when, they found out that we were doing this interview. A lot of them were repetitive, but one of the questions that had was a common theme of is how are you now? Like, have you received therapy? Like that was a big topic. Like after all of the mess that he's been through, he's got to be getting therapy. Have you done that?
Yes, the thing about mental therapy when it comes to the Black community has always been a stigma. I think Simone Biles woke us up to it in maybe 2021. Don't quote me on the year. But when you're going back to what I've been through, that's 10 years, 9, 8, 7, 6, it was a big stigma. It wasn't something that we talked about. And when you really want to think about it, how the Black community operate, the movie Soul Food came out around 1997. You had Big Mama protecting all of the family secrets. We don't talk about this. The uncle that has a mental disability, he'll stay in a room. You know, all of the things that go on in the family's terms of mental, physical, verbal abuse, we're going to cover that up. And when Big Mama dies, the family falls apart because we never really handled this. We never really talked about it. So I really want to open up the conversation because I'm not special. I'm sure a lot of leaders been through this, not only band directors, leaders, but we don't talk about it, especially as Black men, if you really want to go there. So it was hard for me to seek mental therapy, but I'm in the process of it now, and it has been a godsend. If you don't take care of your mental and emotional health, it leads to physical health. It leads to substance abuse. It leads to drug abuse. It leads to verbal and physical abuse. It leads to things that will take you out real fast. So mental health is the fundamental. It's first and foremost. So I encourage everybody to do what I'm doing. And yes, I'm in treatment right now. And oh, just talking and being able to vent and being able to say what's on your mind without judgment. It's something that I wish I would have had back then.
Right. Maybe you could have talked through some of those situations that you have, but we're gonna get into the book. So I'm not gonna give away the whole thing because I know you want, people to read it and everything, but it starts off with the powers that be calling you to let you know that you have gotten the interim director of bands position at Southern. And you go on to tell you that it goes on to say that your supervisor, the vice president of student affairs, has a connection with your father. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I remember being a little kid and I know his father. I never knew the vice chancellor, he's like 7 or 8 years younger than me. So around that time, he probably was a baby. But I know the father. I remember our families used to go out together and things like that. The building was downtown Baton Rouge, and I was so proud of the building because it had our last name on it. It was Hamer and their last name, law firm. I don't know which was in front of the other. I'm gonna make sure because some people are gonna know what I'm talking about. That building is still standing today, and it's owned by the father the last time I checked. But it was some history there that still haven't been explained to me, but I remember that name. So when you refer to that part of the book, when I got the call from the Reverend, and the last name came up, it just took my mind back, which caused me to call my mom. And I don't want to give too much of the book away, but the things that I was going through from the beginning were things that I truly didn't understand because it involved story of my father.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you, because one of the people wanted to know, why didn't you talk to your dad about the history? And let me just say that I'm going to use names that were in the book. So I don't, some were pseudonyms, some were their names flat out. But you said it's Dumas. Is it Dumas? I think that's pronounced that way.
Dumas.
Dumas. Okay, Dumas. And so why didn't you ever talk to your dad and get like the specifics on how y'all are intertwined?
Well, it's personal, but my dad, without going into too much detail, my dad is in a nursing home right now.
Okay.
And sometimes he have good days and sometimes he have bad days. And I was very careful of to bring different names to him because I didn't want him to go back into a depression or anything like that. So a lot of things I had to try to figure out on my own. I asked my mom, but it was a lot of things I still don't know today. So that's it right there.
Yeah, I get that. My dad, he suffered through dementia, so I get that. What I want to do is just kind of like read some of the questions that people submitted, because there's so much that I want to know, but I'll just start reading. So it's one person asked, throughout the book, it seems while you were amazing as a musician and instructor, you lacked when it came to playing your role through the diplomacy, doing the political dance with administrators, board members, influential folks, and so on. Do you think things would have fared different if you didn't push back so much with your supervisors?
Of course, it would have. If I knew how to kiss a little behind, but at what cost? And let's get into this whole thing. You have two hemispheres of your brain. You have the left and you have the right. One hemisphere is responsible for the creativity, your feelings, your love, the passion, making music, the arts, and great band directors. That's their side. The other side is facts, figures, math, all that other stuff. No emotion, just facts. But to be a great leader in terms of band, you have to be able to balance both. But I don't know any great artist out there who's not emotional about their stuff. Erykah Badu broke that thing down real good. So you're battling both sides of your brain. And sometimes I'm a musician first, so the emotional side got in the way of a lot of the factual side because the way you came at me or the way you want to use us. And I injected a lot of emotions when I should have been more factual. But it's hard for a band director to do because you got to be able to do both, if that makes sense. Which makes you kind of crazy. People think you crazy. That's why they don't understand artists, because we're going back and forth. And we're trying to balance both, but if you're serious about your art, you're going to be a lot emotional, a lot more emotional than you are factual. That makes sense.
Oh yeah, it does. It does. So some other folks said, it's clear to see that you were set up to fail. Why do you feel that no one came to provide aid or assist you in being successful?
Okay. I want to do this by dropping a nugget since we don't want to talk about the book. But I want to talk about one section of the book. Which will lead to answer this question. There's a particular section where I describe a gentleman as a political appointee at the highest level of state government.
Yep.
And he sent me an inappropriate text message. I met the gentleman. Let me tell you how I know the gentleman. He used to be the chief of staff to the Baptist Church. He was the pastor's chief of staff. He also used to be the chair of the Southern University Board of Supervisors. And now he's a political appointee at the highest level of state government. And I don't want to say the position, but this guy is someone who I knew of before he knew of me, who I knew of somebody who was important. Don't touch this person. He don't play. So in his position at the highest level of state government, he called to see if the band can do a surprise birthday party for the governor, in which we did. You know, we had a lot of things to do, but we did it. And that he got my number through that way. I didn't think anything of it, but then after a while, the next semester, that was the spring semester. So the fall semester, I received a text from an older gentleman. He's about 15 years older than me. You look good today. And I'm like, thank you. You know, he older, you know, I didn't really think much about it. But then it comes into a sexual proposition that made me feel a lot of ways. Number one, fear. Because if you read the chapters before that, in particular chapter 18, fear. Number two, anger. How dare you disrespect me like that? What I really want to tell you right now, but I can't. Number three, depression. It's like, who's watching me? I had to look out the window at the time. What's going on? It's so many layers to that. And a man of power at the highest level of state government to tell me, once I decline the advance, to tell me I'm going to do what he say I'm going to do. If they don't send you somewhere when you know you can't really do anything about it. But to answer the question, I would have got a lot of help for the band if I would have played the game. Had I given into that advance, I probably would have been in the SU elite. But is it worth selling your soul? Is it worth losing yourself? I was lost enough trying to do things my way. So that was tough. That was tough. That sent me to a place, a helpless place, where you really want to kind of fight somebody, but you know you can't because there's too many consequences. But you really feel some type of way to just violate it. It's, I really can't put it in words. But to be able to open yourself up to all your vulnerabilities and put that out to the world, that's a scary feeling. But once it's out there and people read it, it's a powerful feeling. I know the jokes come. That's what we do as a community. But when I say let's talk about it, let's talk about it. There's a lot of things we need to talk about. My situation is not special, but I'm just glad I didn't lose myself and sold myself to that type of craziness. It's the best word I can say right now.
Okay. So I did read the whole book. I actually inhaled the book and read through it so fast over Thanksgiving weekend. And to me, it just seems like there is a common theme of betrayal in some way. So like, you know, you mentioned, without putting it too much, you had a mentor that is very known in the band world, that he felt betrayed you. Even when it came to when y'all had the Boombox Classic and the hotel situation, and then like you had to jump through all these hoops to get your kids a decent hotel. And then the dean came out of nowhere and was like, oh, well, you know what? I reserved y'all some rooms anyway. You know, it's just like this common theme of let down, betrayal, jankiness. Like, I don't know how to describe it. So, how do you feel about all of that? Like, how do you feel about the people that are involved? Are you still talking to those that were mentioned in the book? You know, I will say this. I did reach out to Dr. Taylor and say, hey, look, you know, I'm going to be interviewing Nathan Hamer, and I wanted to see if you wanted to make a statement. Because, you know, I'm trying to be above board. I'm trying to make it fair. And he said he has no comment, but, you know, he appreciated me letting him know. But back to your question, like, have you been in touch with any of these people? Like, what are your relationships with these folks?
There's a lot of these people that's listed, so we'll start with Dr. Taylor since you brought him up. I'm gonna tell you this. After everything happened, I remember my first conversation with him. It was immediately after I was terminated. I think they were in the middle of band camp, high school band camp, and I told him that I'm sorry, the website will be taken down because I was funding that through my pocket, the human jukebox online.com. And we exchanged some words because I was telling him what I was going to do. Then he started talking strong and I'm talking now. I'm like, okay, you want to be strong? And not going into detail of the conversation. It wasn't a bad conversation. It was just a more of, I'm in charge. You're not going to tell me what you're going to do. Well, I'm paying for it, so I am going to tell you what I'm going to do. Aside from that, we shared some text messages in 2019, all positive. I'm trying to support him. And the last time when I never wanted to contact him again, shall I say, is when I was in an interview with the officials. It's in the book. And they told me that only two or three people said they got paid through honorariums. He was not one of them. He denied it. He lied about it. I'll say that on your interview. He lied. I took care of my staff, whether ethical or unethical. I took care of my staff, and everybody received payment in front of each other to make sure that everybody got the same thing. But he denied it. He wasn't the only one to deny it. But when I got that from the officials, I just stopped talking to him. He reached out to me last, maybe New Year's Day 2022. He sent a message to my Facebook inbox telling me Happy New Year. You know how you could read the notification without showing that it's red? That's what I did to him. I didn't respond. And but what he needs to know is I'm not mad at him. In the book, it's talking about the 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18 versions of myself, but it doesn't reflect how I feel today in 2023. I'm not mad at him. Matter of fact, I'm happy that you're sitting in that seat because I know you're not happy. You know what it feels like. You getting shredded apart, just like I did. So I hope you understand now, shall I say. So it's no bad feeling. I don't wish anything bad on him. I wouldn't help him, but I wouldn't hurt him. I just would let him exist. You know, he have to see for himself.
Okay. So what about I'm not gonna try to tell all the book away, but you know, people really wanted to know, like Eric and Jab so you've got Eric, you've got Jabari, you've got Dr. Taylor, you've got Brian Simmons, you've got your whole staff of people. And people wanted to know, like, if you because some of the things you said, you were like, I don't know if I trust these people and yada yada yada. So why did you keep these people on your team? That's what people wanted to know. Why do you want to keep these people on your team when you knew that you had like trust issues with them?
Well, that's clear, Brian. Brian has always been solid. We may not always saw eye to eye, but Brian Simmons, Lorenzo Hart, who didn't get paid much, we'll talk about that later, was always solid. Sandra Bird, my administrative assistant, was always solid. Jabari, I never liked him. And yeah, you know what? Go back to the beginning of the book when I'm at the realization that we only got $90,000 for scholarships. And you know what? This is not a lot. Oh, wait. That's not 90,000. It's 45,000 a semester. Slapping my head. Running into brick wall after brick wall. Jabari was probably the biggest hater of the band when I was assistant director. You know, every band have alumni talking trash. It ain't what it used to be, blah, 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 blah. You know, I wanted to give the loudest mouth in the room an opportunity. Number two, I was desperate. Number three, Jabari came with Eric. Eric was a junior when I was a crab in Southern Band, so he kind of helped raise me through that thing. He also introduced me to arranging. So my trust for him allowed me to do business with Jabari because they're partners. So I thought maybe he could balance them out. But the last thing, doing more of the same was not an option. We were broke. How do I take a band that achieved just about everything to the next level? That was the question that I had to answer. And I had no answer at the time. So if they're good at what they do and there's no risk to the university and you go out and get this deal and we get 80% and you get 20%, I think it's a win-win. But if you fail, I could just say I gave you a chance. Goodbye. That was my thought pattern. Ask me, would I do it again? No.
Okay. Well, you know, let's talk about that whole budget thing, because that was a big piece of the book about how you only got, like, the only budget that the jukebox had was through the high school camp and the dance camp. Am I correct on that?
You're correct, but you're incorrect.
Okay.
That was the only budget that I was aware of. But if you realize, it's this young lady, and I'm calling her a young lady, named Sonya Norwood, the mother of Brandy and Ray J, who came in, went through an 800-page packet, something I would never done. I don't have that kind of time. And found the budget. There's an area in the book where I highlighted I had to go to the budget director. And as short and rude as she was, she explained that if I didn't use this budget by a certain date, that it would go to my division supervisor, which I outlined who it was in the book, which is why his office and his people were getting taken care of. So even though that budget was small, we had a little bit more money. At that point, I realized that Southern not training me in my fiduciary obligation was not an oversight. It was on purpose. Mm-hmm. It was on purpose.
Right. Oh, wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can really break it down, but it was on purpose. Read the book.
Okay. So with that being said, I'm thinking you have this $90,000 that you know of to use for a year, split over two semesters. And when you divide that by, you know, the number of people in your band, it ends up being like, what, $100 and something a semester?
That's if I gave everybody something, but maybe 10% of the band received money. The other 90 didn't. That show you how strong the program was. They didn't get anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't, which is criminal. Mm-hmm. Every student deserves something. Not everybody deserves a full scholarship, but everybody deserves something because of the amount of time you have to give beyond your studies. And that's been my begging call since I've been there. I've been trying to break it down to administrator after administrator, and it was falling on deaf ears. It was falling on deaf ears. Mind you, I pointed out in the book, when I became band director in 2014, that was 25 years of receiving the same scholarship package, $90,000 a year. So 1989, $90,000 was way more money than in 2014 because the tuition more than tripled at the time, but it was still the same $90,000. So we really was getting a reduction over the years.
So another person was asking, you know, personality plays a part in job and employment politics. Do you feel that being outspoken or cocky played a role in your downfall? I'm just
yes and no. I don't think I'm cocky. I think I'm confident. But when you lead a group of 230 students, you have to be confident. You have to let them know everything we practice all week, we get ready to go to battle this band over here. We got this. So that's where it comes from. So that's what contributed to the success of my band. But that same attitude carried to the administration, yeah, may have contributed to my downfall. But I really don't think it did. I think me not taking the offer of the SU Elite, and there's no official invitation, you're invited to the SU Elite. No, there's kind gestures, do this, do that, come to this party, you're invited to this, and you don't show up, they take that as an insult. Because I could have been as cocky, if you know who in the SU Elite, they way more cocky than I am. I could have said anything I wanted to do. I could have did anything I wanted to do around it, as far as breaking laws. They probably would have covered it up. So, yeah, covered it up. I'm just going to keep it real. So I don't think that took part in my downfall. I think me not playing the game and not realizing an invitation when I see it took part in my downfall.
Okay. I got a lot of questions about your relationship with Lawrence Jackson, and, you know, again, very well-known person in the HBCU band world. And from my reading, it sounded like, you know, he wasn't there for you, or he betrayed you, and he was once a mentor to you. Like, have you been in touch with him, or have you talked with him? Tell me about, like, where you are with that particular relationship.
Last time I talked to Mr. J was May of 2018. I have not spoken to him since.
Wow. Okay.
I have not. Mm-mm.
Okay.
And he was a second father to me. He was my band dad. He's been there for me through a lot of tough situations, and I've been there for him too. But I think I wrote carefully about him in the book. And out of everything that I went through, and it was a lot of good and bad, that's the only situation that hurt me. He was the last superhero living in my mind. And he broke me. He did. I'm fine now. I am. I still love him. I still will never do anything to hurt him. But it's just something that I'm not ready to get over yet, if that makes sense.
Okay. So in the book, like I said, you use some people that are pseudonyms and some people that are, you know, it's their real name. And so, look, I'm going to get into it. You know, I'm going to get into it. I got to ask about Sharon. Okay. So the street's been talking. Let me just tell you, the street's been talking. There's an alleged person that people think is Sharon. So I want you to talk a little bit about that Sharon relationship.
Let me see this one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's your mind. Now.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. You go ahead.
I met Sharon because the MBM team didn't want to promote the band Plays On. This is a DVD, the history of Southern's band. So that's how she got in my life. But what do you want to know? You have to guide me on this one, because this was kind of tough.
Yeah, I know it's tough. And I know that, like, I'm not in the business. Like, it sounds like, in your description, you were roofied, in other words, roofied. And, you know, I do believe, you know, people can be sexually assaulted regardless of gender. And like, I know people were coming to me asking me little questions. Like, they were saying things like, for example, if he said he ran out of the house with his pants hardly on, how was he able to drive home if he was still under the influence and things like that?
Yes, I was still under the influence. I could have killed myself. A police officer could have pulled me over. Matter of fact, I don't even remember coming home. I just remember waking up in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember unlocking the door, running to my room. I just remember waking up in the morning, remembering the events of the night before. So yeah, I put my life in danger in that situation. I really did.
So now that, you know, I know some time has passed, but people were asking, like, Had you thought about like pressing charges against her, outing her as saying like this XYZ person is the real Sharon? Yeah, because yeah. Why'd you choose to use like pseudonyms for some, but not for everybody? Because you also mentioned your friend Josephine, who I know who that is. but their name in the book is Josephine. So tell me about like why you chose to do it that way.
I'm not ready to press charges, even though she sued me. Even though a lot of things. What I really want to say is I wanted to talk about it because I'm sure I'm not the only man that been in that position. And I'm pausing because it's kind of hard to talk about, but I put it out there, so I have to talk about it. I wanted to call the police initially, but it would have been all about the Southern University band director. And number two, when is the first time or last time you heard a man say he was raped? It makes you look weak. So I put it out there to let people know what happened to me. And I tried to protect her, but these streets move faster than FBI, and they find out. So they know who it is, and she needs to feel the same thing I felt. You want to sue behind me asking for 10%, supposedly, when you know what the real reason was? Come on, girl, stop playing. Stop playing like that. Just because I wasn't feeling you. But I have not brought myself to turn in pressing charges because I blame myself still for putting myself in that position when I know I didn't deserve that, even though I'm not dumb. I knew she liked me. I knew that from the beginning. But do anybody really deserve that? No. But that's something I'm still kind of processing. But I really don't know if I want to press charges. But then again, we'll see.
Well, yeah, like I said, I'm not glad that it happened to you, but I'm glad that it's made people aware that you cannot, it's not only women that could get sexually assaulted and taken advantage of.
Well, I want to add to that. I think it's been happening for a while, but I'm trying to be an example for the 21st century band directors, our leaders. And I want to say things they can't say without fear of retaliation. So I wouldn't mind being that voice because at this point, I'm a polarizing figure. Either you love me or you hate me. But when you think about my name, you're going to feel something. And I don't mind saying things that people are scared to say. So I really want to put that out there to let people know how common it really is, because I've been sexually harassed, not to that level, that's rape, but sexually harassed as far as violated. Probably since my first year teaching, but we laugh at office men. But how do you know it's sexual harassment? The quick thing is, you repeat that behavior to a woman that you don't know and see where it lands you. So I've been told inappropriate things. I've been gripped on while I'm conducting the band. Somebody passed by and just grabbed you from behind. You know what I mean by that. And you have to just keep, So I've been there. I've been there. That's why I'm so respectful and so careful when I talk to people, because I don't want to seem like a predator or something like that, because I know what it feels like.
I got you. Well, let's switch gears a little bit now. I know that you want to talk about like the lessons that you want people to learn from this book. And I'll tell you, as somebody, I have 2 degrees in higher ed administration. I've worked in colleges for about almost 20 years. And so I know about the politics and the stuff that goes on behind the scene. You get to see how the sausage gets made, and most of the time that's not pretty. So I guess my question for you is, and this goes along with something somebody else asked, do you have any recommendations as far as like what recommendations do you have for others to successfully operate under a lack of institutional control, especially at HBCUs?
If they're not willing to partner with you, I have a quote in the book. I don't recommend that. Get away. But this is one thing I recommend. What would have saved me is had I been treated like a football coach. Meaning you have a contract, any camps or things that you do, you have more autonomy over funds that you bring in. It gives you more leeway and freedom. But if it's a lack of institutional control, I advise you just to walk away from it because it's not worth your safety. It's not worth your freedom. If you don't trust anybody around there and everybody just doing what they have to do, that's not the place you want to be at. And it's easier said than done, but
Okay. So, people are like, would you consider the book for a movie? Would you consider even like developing a class that would address governance and politics in regards to band director on both the high school and collegiate levels? Wow, that almost sounds like a thesis or a dissertation there. So, like, what have people been saying about the book? Like, I mean, because they've been telling me, hey, we want a movie. This needs to be a movie. This needs to be I don't know, a podcast in itself, like.
I'm honored because it's a lot to unpack in June. It's a lot to unpack. And on the surface level, you see the tea, the conversations, all the name dropping I'm doing. Yes, I'm going there. And I'm telling the truth as I saw it. You seeing the truth through the director's lens. You heard from everybody else. I was quiet, so it's my turn now. But once you go beneath that, you get into the politics realm of it. Once you go beneath that, you get into the humanity. You see a character arc. I say some things about some people that chapters later, I'm saying something else about them. So you get to see the whole humanity. Like, people got to realize evil and good lies in all of us. You can list the most notorious man in history who's known for bad things. I could tell you one good thing he did. You can list the greatest man in history. You put him on a pedestal, so he's just good. I can list you one bad thing he did. We all capable of doing good and bad. So I develop a character arc based off how I saw it. I didn't make anything up. I put too much information in there to make it up. So I wanted you to get into the humanity level, but the deepest level of it all is the emotional and mental health portion of it. It's a common theme in the book about me being an alcoholic. And why? Because I wasn't taking care of the mental, emotional side of it, which led to substance abuse. So, and a lot of people in high places fall victim to that because we don't talk about it. We don't talk among each other. So that's what I really want people to get out of juke, all of those levels. But the tea at the top is piping high. Come on, you know it. It's piping high. Is it good enough for a movie? Yes. And we might see it on the screen soon. Who knows?
Okay. So I feel like I'm asking you kind of a facetious question, but like, do you still have love for music? You still have love for HBCU bands? You still have love for the human jukebox? Am I right on that? Like, tell me how you feel on
I
that.
want you to read the beginning, the foreword of the book written by my brother. It talks about me being a 7-year-old child. That little boy's still in here. I still love bands. I still love the human jukebox. I still love being creative and arranging music. The spurts come every now and then. I mean, maybe it was July. I posted maybe two arrangements that I was just playing around with. I still love to do that. It's still some pain though, but it never changed your love. The one thing, the hardest thing about becoming director is when you sit in that seat, and I think I made a reference to that with Dr. Taylor. He see what I'm feeling now. Band would never feel the same again because here comes all the problems. Here comes all the pressure. Here comes all the politics. Here comes all the persecution. So I'm glad to return back to the love phase of it. I'm looking at things and I'm a band fan again now. I love it. So, and I think I'll be that to the day I die. So I will always have a love for music and a love for band.
Okay. Have any colleges contacted you to try to teach for them or do clinics? Are you even interested in going back into that route?
Yes, I have been contacted by a few colleges, and will I go back to that route? I would never say never, nor am I too good for any position. Hamer won't take an assistant position. Hamer won't take an arranging position. I will do what I have to do at that point. My best years in the profession is when I was just only arranging. Lawrence Jackson protected me from all of that, and when he suddenly just left, it exposed me for something that I wasn't prepared for. Even though I knew I was the next man up, I wasn't prepared for. So would I mind going back to that spot where the love and the passion and the creativity were there? I would love to do it. So I do see myself standing in front of a band again. Now that my story is out there, you know the good, the bad, and the ugly. I don't need a resume. My book is the resume.
Okay. So, like, what do you think about Southern universities, the human jukeboxes sound now? Because let me just keep it 100. I've gotten messages saying that, some of the jukes are upset about the way to something, like something is missing, and they want to know if you noticed that. And what would you change as far as like how the current program is going now?
I was very vocal in the book how I feel about Kendrick Taylor, who's the current director. But one thing I promised him upon leaving, and I put it in a text message so he can screenshot it and put it out there. I owe you my silence. I will not criticize anything you're doing, not publicly. I owe you my silence. And even though the book is out, and even though you know how I feel, and you read what you read, I'm still a man of my word. I'm gonna remain silent on that issue.
Okay. I respect that big time. That's classy. I'm trying to find some of the other questions that you might have you answered a lot of questions. Okay, in a joking way, what's up with that Fifth Quarter Club that Sanjay Norwood did? I was like,
I'm glad you brought that up. Y'all need to follow the Fifth Quarter Club. Sonya Norwood is active again. It was in the book, but since the book been out, it's been re-energized. So it's a lot of things that's being dropped behind the scenes. Miss Norwood has been the fuel to my engine. She's been pushing me, even at my lowest. I can call her when I was in prison. I could call her when I was at the highest director of bands. We're talking now. So she really trying to shake some things up, and I'm really trying to tell her to stop because there's some more stuff that she know in terms of documents that she mad that hasn't been included in the book. You read the book. Don't you think that was enough?
It was a lot.
It was a lot,
I was just
but
joking
it's
about the name,
more.
though. I was like,
There's more.
hold on now.
There's more. And I'm trying to say, no, we did enough. So that's where I am with her.
Okay. Well, do you have like tell me, okay, so what are you doing now? You're in Houston, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me about what your days are like now. What are you doing for work and otherwise?
I'm teaching, actually.
What level?
And that's it. I don't go out. I go to the store. I cook. I cater sometimes when I feel like it. I'm doing what I want to do, and I'm happy. I don't go out places. I don't see people because it's still a little guarded there, but I'm mostly happy just being with me and Coco. That's my dog. She's in here watching me right now.
I'm surprised she
Yeah.
hasn't barked yet. So,
She's doing well. I'm surprised too.
okay. So you're teaching now. Are you able to share what level?
Oh, look at you digging. Oh.
Want to know, my friend. The people want to know.
I'm not ashamed of what I'm doing. I just don't know if I should tell because I just don't trust
Okay.
people. But you asked, I
Okay.
gotta tell the truth. I'm teaching
Well,
elementary school.
okay.
I'm
Okay.
teaching
Well,
elementary school and
we need good
I
elementary
enjoy
school
the
teachers.
hours. But it taught me patience. It's the hand. I gotta go to the bathroom. You know, anybody know me, I would have told them where to go. But I love the kids. I don't know how much longer I'm gonna do this though. I'm not gonna say anything, but I'm getting tired of that too. So I don't know if I'm ready to say forget education or I'm just ready for another venture. So I've been venturing around. I had the ability to say I taught elementary, middle, high, and on a university level. So I taught on every level. So I'm able to be that consultant or that advisor to give you advice about your program because I know what you're going through. And everywhere I've taught throughout my career has always been in the Black community, underprivileged kids and things like that. That's what I'm doing right now to this day.
So, what kind of advice would you give somebody who is, let's say they're a senior music ed major, about to go out into the band directing world? What kind of advice would you give that person?
Find you a good mentor. Find you a good mentor because the career you're about to enter into is going to require all of your patience, all of your compassion and your skills, and you need to find a good partner too, life partner, wife, husband, whatever. Somebody who's going to have to understand that you're a shared person, that you have to give yourself to this program. It takes a strong person to be married to a coach or a band director or a pastor or someone like that. But more importantly, know that you're not alone. You need an outlet. You need a resource. That's actually what the area I want really want to move into is being that resource person for band directors because no one was there for me. It really wasn't. No one was. I was a mentor to my staff. But I needed a mentor myself.
Yeah,
And I
I'm
think
with
I
you.
outlined mentors need mentors. So that's the area I really want to move into because I can cover just about every area that I think I'm an expert either by accident or by on purpose, things that happened in my career. But I can tell you what to do and what not to do.
Okay. Yeah, so two things struck out to me as that in that statement. The first is that people who know me, I always say to them, it takes a special kind of person to be married to a band director. So I thought that was just like spot on when you said that. And the second thing is that it did kind of seem like in the book that you are out there on an island. And I don't think anybody should be out there on an island, especially when it's one of the biggest HBCU band programs out there. Like it's just kind of surprised me about how they kind of left you hanging out there. And this is Southern, this ain't, a two-piece and a snack band, at such and such school. Like this is Southern. And I even went back and I looked at those when you put out the message to Nathan Hamer where you held up the instruments and they were falling apart, like all the threads were falling apart on like the overlay of the uniform. And I was like, How are you gonna leave somebody out there hanging out there like that for at Southern? Really?
See, I documented stuff, but the beauty of that, take this side of what we're talking about, but let's go back into the crank fest, the light cameras action. Woo, let's get it, all that stuff. And the drone shots, let's go back to all the nice stuff that was blinding people from it, the bling bling. How do you think that happened? We put on a good facade. And that's another thing that drove me crazy. As much interviews I did during the time, and I was always positive, I always this character Hammer Time, that used to kill me. That's why I said, I feel like a used car salesman. I'm selling people lemons. I'm out here living a lie. But I was doing it, and the people was buying it. But that wasn't what was real. But that's what I was trying to sell. And I mean, that's what I sold. It sold. Mind you, the band was still kicking on high cylinders. We still were making noise because it was the passion that I brought in. So some of the things that I was going through at the time, I would come in to the students and I'll be fussing at them for no reason. They don't even know why. I said, pick your feet up on the bed. Ah, don't you talk back to me. Don't you? And they just looking like it made for good bands. Even though it tore me apart, it made for good bands. That's all I can say.
Okay.
It made for good bands.
Wow. This has been a lot, and I'm so glad that you're able to like come here and tell your story. And so, I wanted to see if like this is it's open mic here. I want you to get whatever you want the people to know off your chest. Is there anything that you would like to leave us with? Yeah, go ahead and have at it.
Read the book. I read the book from page one to the end. That's dropping the mic right there. And it's not the end of Hammer Time. I don't know what the future will hold, but I know it'll be something great. But just know I'm good, know I'm getting the treatment that I need, and know that I don't have any anger and hatred in my heart for all of those people who I outlined in the book. Yes, at one time I did. And at the time I did is when that's what you're reading right now. But I'm over that now. I'm in a forgiveness phase. I think I've forgiven everybody. That don't mean I want to have a relationship with them. I had to forgive them for me. So I'm better off. I'm better off. I'm wiser, and I really have to determine what I'm gonna do next from here if it's getting back in the band room. But I'll never be the same. If you see me again, don't mean it won't be great. It just won't be the same. It's not that party anymore. That's what I really want people to know.
Right. Oh wow. Well, the world misses your arrangements. The band world, we miss, not that other people don't arrange, but I mean, I really like,
Wow.
some of the stuff you did. So
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it has
I
been a
appreciate that.
it has really been a pleasure talking with you. I
Same here.
mean, yeah.
I hope I didn't bore you out.
Oh no. You gave
Thank
me what I wanted, so it has been great. Thank you for coming.
you for inviting me.
You have listened to the HBCU Band Experience with Christy Walker. Interviews and editing conducted by yours truly, Dr. Christy Walker. The music is District 4 by Kevin McLeod, and you can find this podcast on hbcubandexperience.podbean.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Take care.